So our next topic is less fun. This is regarding GEMT, which, to my understanding, is ground emergency Medicaid transport. Correct? Oh, I can't hear you, Kyle.
That is correct. Ground
That is
emergency
correct.
medical
Yeah.
transport.
Okay. So we have this is a program that is fairly straightforward, but you basically take your total expenditures related to transport and then multiply that by a fraction that were Medicaid transports. We can go into all of this. Like, for example, if you have $1,000 in expenditures and 100 calls, and 10% of those calls are Medicaid calls, then $100 of your total expenses for GEMT purposes are divided by the 10 calls, Medicaid calls, equals $10 in expenses per Medicaid call. That cost per call is then used to determine what you receive. In 2019, we used the Inter-Island Medical Center sale at the end of 2018 to pay down the building bond. So the money from that sale went directly to the bond. And that raised our cost per transport to around $3,000. So I think there was a mistake in reporting, is what this comes down to, and that we are trying to rectify this mistake because we caught it, because Nathan caught it. Thank you. And so this is an unplanned expenditure. As Everett and I were talking yesterday about this money, it's kind of free money. It's kind of, it's a grant coming out of nowhere. But we were overpaid in 2019, essentially. Correct?
Correct. Yeah. And what happened is Pam and I this fall, when we came in to EMS, we looked at the GEMT application, which was due in November, and we decided that it would not be wise to attempt to do it ourselves. And it wasn't just, because of how complicated it is. It was also just because we had a million things to do. So we paid a contractor to look at it. And so he found this. And so we owe the money. This is actually for 2020, though. We're likely to owe some money for 2019. I don't think it'll be as much, but it'll be something. So.
Because this is basically based on the amount of money that came from the sale of the old med center was calculated somehow into the reimbursements for GEMT. And we won't have another big show of revenue like that in 2019. So we shouldn't expect to owe. I mean, it was a mistake. It was reported that way, number one. And number two, we won't have that sort of income again, so we can expect, but that we should anticipate there is going to be some sort of problem
You
next
can
year.
elect to receive, you can receive in any given year a reimbursement from the Ground Emergency Medical Transport Program based on the prior year's cost estimate. And you can receive payments for every run through the year. And there's a reconciled at the end of the year. So we have changed that. So we're just going to take a lump sum at the end of the year so this doesn't happen to us again. I'm just tired of back pay and overpay and whatever else. I just want things to be run properly the first time and not have more problems like this. So we still have to fix 2020 and 2019. So it's not a lot of fun, but on the other hand, we're pretty confident that this is accurate and it has to happen. We don't have a lot of choice here.
Well, I'm grateful you
Yeah,
caught it.
I'm sorry.
Oh no, I'm said I'm really grateful that you caught it. I mean, we're all feeling, rather raw about this because of the civil investigative demand, and this is a similar issue. So we do need to. I'm really glad you contracted it out, and it was done professionally, by someone that only does this type of thing. And we need to be sure we're doing that in the future. I'm sorry, everything.
Yeah, I look at this as they paid us 120, what, about 120 $120,000 in GEMT in 2020. And of that $120,000, they overpaid us. We got too much money, and we discovered that. And now we need to give them back the overpayment, which is quite significant. But, I mean, we got the money. It's not our money, actually. It's a mistake, and it's not our money. And last thing we want to do is hang on to money that's not ours. We certainly, if we did that willfully, we'd be in real trouble, and rightfully so. So we need to give them back what doesn't belong to us.
I have a question. Is there any concern that we would be paying a penalty because we were overpaid in 2019 as well? It was miscalculated in 2019 and it was miscalculated in 2020. Are we going to incur a penalty that might be unexpected?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, if we were caught later and we were fined or something, if we didn't admit this and bring it up to the state and say, look, we're sorry, we screwed up. But I mean, as you can see, there's a huge lead time on GEMT stuff. I mean, they reconcile long after the fact. And, you know, it's, I don't think there's going to be any penalties. Pam, do you want to comment on that? Looks like you're about to say something.
Yeah, I don't think right now there would be any penalties because it's their policy to pay us that money ahead of time based on what the figures were the last time. So they have approved that. But now we're looking at it, reconciling it, and see that, no, we shouldn't get that much money. And now that we've recognized it, then we're going to pay it back. So I don't think there would be a penalty at this point.
Well, I'd like to make a motion that we pass this and pay this off and that we amend this in the future so we don't have this problem again. Both of those things. But I make a motion that we would approve this. I don't see why we wouldn't.
Second.
Specifically, we need to make a motion to authorize for the payment, the repayment to GEMT in the amount of $81,809.41.
Great. That's, what she said.
I'll second that. And it does sound like it has been resolved going forward. So I don't know that we need a motion for that part, but we can express our appreciation for doing that. A better calculation up front and receipt of funding at the end of the year so we can feel comfortable that it's accurate.
Yeah, great. So thank you, Nathan and Pam, on that. Good work catching it. Yes, Trish.
Next time, find one that is positive instead of negative.
Did you guys vote on this motion?
Not yet.
Okay. Not yet.
Trish is trying.
Do we need Trish to have any further comment. Discussion?
No, did you have something?
Ready to vote.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I'm ready to vote on it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Passes unanimously. Thank you. Let's see. What other fun topic do we have here tonight? Moving on, we are, we've had quite a few executive sessions over the last month regarding a public records lawsuit. And I think I'm just going to read the press release to explain this. Is that okay with everybody? Just to read it into the record? Unless somebody else has something they want to say. Or Kyle, do you want to take this on and explain this issue? Or
if you want, but you can read the press release. Well, that way people will hear it anyway. But okay. The overview is that we were kind of the victims of a serial public records requester who provided a very ambiguous request, and we resolved it the best way we could, and we're about to hear about how that happened.
Thank you. Yeah, so this is a public records lawsuit from Eric Hood. On January 5th, 2020, our district received a request from Eric Hood stating that, quote, I learned that your organization was recently audited by the state auditor, and may I have all the records it got from the auditor and all records of any response to the audit or to the audit report, including any changes or planned changes to policies or practices, end quote. This request did not identify a specific record and could not have been and could have been denied. Instead, the district released its three most recent audit reports, which include the district's response to the audit and asked the requester to provide clarification on what was specifically desired. The requester responded, it was audit 102-3513, which we had provided. The district took this as confirmation that he had received the requested report. He did not ask for a more detailed response, set of records, or indicate any dissatisfaction in any way. During the last week, before the statute of limitations on public records lawsuits ran out, the requester filed a lawsuit against the district alleging that we did not comply with his request. The district has opted to settle this lawsuit for $15,000. Commissioner Everett Clary said, quote, initially we wanted to fight, but it would have cost us more to litigate it, and it would have cost the public 2 to 3 times the amount of money to prove we were right. It's public money, and we want to treat it respectfully. Commissioner Trish Lehman added, quote, I, too, would want to fight this, but the cost in public money was just not worth it. We have since discovered that Eric Hood has apparently filed over 100 lawsuits against small entities across the state, many of which settle in the same range as our district, and the comprehensive list has been covered by Port Townsend reporter Brian Kelly in The Leader. This is unfortunate. You know, I believe our legal counsel and our staff did everything by the book on this one, but there are some ways for people to take advantage in the public records law. So that's what this guy does. He's apparently very good at it. So are there any further comments on this?
Any of the public that's just, I would encourage anyone listening, any that's interested to research Eric Hood, because it's pretty shocking to see the level of lawsuits that he has filed against small districts, school districts, hospital districts, all over the state, and taking, and I believe he's taking advantage of this. And it just makes me sorrowful for all the public money that's going to this gentleman.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he makes his living doing this. He's very successful at it. He's settled many of these because the lawsuit is for actually potentially a lot more money than we settled for. So not only would litigation cost us, but if we lost, it would be for more. And the reason that's a worry is because the state of Washington is very strict about public records. So much so that I think when we tried to think of ways to deal with this, really the only long-term way of dealing with it is to talk to your congressman to please look at the public records law, because our fear was that really we might lose it despite what we did in good faith. That might, because of the attitude, because of the law, the way the law is written in the state, we might still have been found in the wrong, even though we thought we did everything right. And that, I think, might be a law that could be written better or differently. And so that really is, I think, the root cause of the problem, besides that Mr. Hood taking advantage of that doesn't seem to be is the sort of thing that it's a shame. I mean, we're not the only district by a long shot that has suffered this. So, but to think that he probably will continue it until the laws change so districts don't have to be afraid of something like that. So I would, anybody listening, if they want to actually do something about it, because we're going to try to do something about it, try to talk to your congressman about this, because it is a problem. We thought we did what was right, and now we think that it's going to cost us $15,000 to get out of it.
It's very discouraging, especially these are taxpayer dollars that go to fund healthcare, and we're in the middle of a pandemic. It's very discouraging. In that case, if there are no further comments, I would entertain a motion to adopt the settlement agreement between San Juan County Public Hospital District 1 and Eric Hood with no admission of fault for $15,000. Does anybody want to move that, or should I read it again?
I saw move.
Yeah.
How about I move that we adopt the settlement agreement between San Juan County Public Hospital District 1 and Eric Hood with no admission of fault for $15,000. I'll hear a second.
Second.
Thank you. Any further comments or discussion from anyone? All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Does anyone need a break before we move on to our reports? Or do we just want to get through these? I think we want to get through these. Okay. So we'll move on to reports. We'll hand things off to our superintendent, Pam Hitchens.
Okay, this is, we're in the month of January 2021. It was a customary usual January, not any surprises. The revenue was low, like it usually is. It was $3,558, and that was the property tax. It was all property tax. That is 0.15% of our revised budget projections. Our expenses were also low, $2,123, because we paid all of our wage expense back to EMS in December, so we didn't have that monthly payment in January. February expenses will catch up some of the payments that we make one time a year, such as to the Association of Washington Public Hospital District and some insurances. So you'll see more of expenses in February. So our expenses were low, 0.09% of the revised budget projections, or not revised budget, whatever. It's our only budget for 2021. In the cash department, we have $694,174, which is about $14,174 more than what was estimated for the 2021 budget. So when the beginning cash letter comes out from the county, we should have that $14,000 additionally added to our budget. So we usually get that letter sometime in the end of March or the first part of April. So that's a good. We're pretty much right on the budget. And this time of year, I'm still working with the auditors for the 2019 financial report. So I'm actually working in 3 years right now. I'm working on 2019 with the auditors. I'm working on 2020 for the end of the year to get that cemented and figures from 2020, and then I'm working in 2021 January. So this first part of the year is always kind of, you have to really be careful and ask yourself what year are you in when you start to work on something. But that's the way it is every first quarter. So anybody have any questions on the financial report?
Just a comment that, you know, we go through this audit process every year. It's a normal part of being a public, you know, taxing district or junior taxing district. But you're doing this virtually this year, which is, you know, a whole new level of things. You know, in the past, we've moved file boxes into an office for the auditors. And this year, they're asking for things and you're sending them and emailing them.
experience. We're, they keep telling me we're towards the end of the audit, and then they'll send out probably tomorrow, Friday, the entrance email to get that. It's really just formalities on the entrance part. But then they send me, you know, another big long list of things, and so then I have to go find them, especially most of it deals with EMS, so I'm not as familiar with the day-to-day, so I have to go find the papers, and then I got to scan them all to the auditor, and then they have to get them and accept them and try to look at them and then ask questions back and forth. So yeah, it's a lot more work. It's less stress because they're not here, and when they're asking you stuff, you know, you're not having to work, you know, in that time frame, but it's a whole lot more work, because usually you could just, you give them all the reporting information in the room over in EMS, and they just sit there and they do their thing, and then they come and they ask you questions, and then you answer them, and then they do their thing. But with it being virtual, they can't do that. So they still have to verify the same things. So it's quite a arduous process for the state auditor's office this last year also, because they've had to do every audit that way. But hopefully we're almost to the end, and haven't got any results of anything yet. This is what they do. They gather all this information, and then they, you know, sit you down and go, okay, this is what we found. So we haven't got that part yet. So that's, you know, where we are in the audit. And then also in operations, we have started the year. You know, we have the two. Everybody knows we have the planning grant and we have the care coordination grant. And those meetings are happening every month. There's the network meeting. There's a HRSA meeting. I think Trish and Gail were in on the first. I think, was this your first care coordination grant meeting yesterday?
Second
care coordination.
Second network meeting. One.
And then Trish sat in on the planning grant. There was a planning grant group meeting last Friday. So those are beginning to happen more, and information. So you'll be able to hear more of what that is happening in that after I leave. And we didn't have any records requests for the month of January, so that was good. One thing that we did learn from the Eric Hood lawsuit was that when we get a request from a person, especially one we don't know of in our district, because most all of the requests we get are from people in our district and people we usually know. This one is to go ahead and Google that name and look at who's requesting it. And if it, and it definitely, you know, if it comes back that they file a bunch of lawsuits and everything, then you know right up front you're going to have to be very, very cautious and diligent. And we did do everything right. We gave the request to the attorney. We made sure, you know, it was all done and everything. But knowing up front that a person may be out to scam you is a good thing. So it made that a correction in when we get a records request, just to have that information going forward. We had, of course, everybody is wanting information about vaccines, and EMS has been really helpful with the health department and the other practices on the island, and helping with giving vaccines and being there for, because this vaccine, especially your second dose, is more problematic for some that can have side effects. So EMS provides an EMT or there just so, you know, if something happens, then there's some kind of reaction that we can provide that service. And that's been really appreciated. And so that continues to go well. Now that the weather has cleared up and the shipments are moving all across the country, we should get ours and have double too at some point. So I'd urge people that to go on that COVID page and look about vaccine information, because it's going to be catching up very quickly. So so you can get caught up on what our county's doing. And that's about it for my operations report. One more thing for, there is a job posting on our website, the sjcphd.org website, for the support person for my departure. So if anyone would like to take a look at that, feel free to look at the requirements and send a letter of interest and CV to Nathan and get scheduled for an interview. So, and that's my report.
Thank you. Will there be, I know this is just my tired question, but is there a plan moving forward for perhaps Kyle Davies to be doing any reporting directly to the board on the care coordination grants?
We are having a meeting tomorrow about that very topic. Okay. About how he and Evan and how they're going to get reporting and get the board the answers and what's going on moving
forward. Just excited for more information. Yeah. I'm just excited to hear what's
going on. That definitely, I'm going to make sure they have that process ironed out before I leave. So,
yeah, they're welcome at our meeting anytime.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Pam. Mm-hmm. And if there aren't any further questions on Pam's reports, we'll move on to Sound Island Emergency Medical Services to our administrator, Nathan Butler.
Commissioner Lachine Seitz texted me earlier. She wants me to take a full hour. We need to end at 8:30.
That's funny, Nathan. That's really funny.
All right, I'll try to keep this.
She loves a long meeting. I know she loves a long meeting.
I know, right? She's just always wants long meetings. Just always have to stop talking so we can get things done. Yeah. All right. Anyway, sorry, picked on her enough. So I'll kind of briefly go over some of the stuff I've already sent to you, just for the sake of the public. Then go over some of the things I'm thinking about right now. We've already spent a lot of time on EMS business, though, so I don't have a ton to say. Like the hospital district, revenue was a little light in January. That's pretty normal. It was actually a little above last January. Cash reserves and investments currently sit at about $1.75 million. That includes our reserve fund, which is pretty much entirely spoken for. Let's see. Keep in mind, that January was about 12% of our annual budgeted expenses. But keep in mind, we do have a lot of large expenditures in January, the first of the year expenditures. We pay our insurance and that sort of thing. We top off the HSA funds. January, we also did a transfer into our reserve fund of $109,000 in accordance with our capital improvement plan. In terms of operations, we were well within the state guidelines for EMS response. Our team continues to do an excellent job. And I thought it was interesting to see how close our January 2021 number of runs was compared against January 2020. Mm-hmm. So January 2020, there were 71 calls. January 2021, there were 68, which is a very, very small decrease, 4%. That's the lowest decrease over the prior year that we've had in the last 12 months, really since COVID began, which tells me that people are not delaying care as long as they were earlier in the COVID crisis. And that The number of calls is definitely leveled out. That's a good thing for patients. People, you know, it was a real problem there for a while, people waiting too long to call EMS. Okay, so that's ops, that's finance and statistics. Anybody want to talk about any questions on that before I launch into the rest of the hops?
Go ahead.
Okay. So, you know, January was a bit of a rough month for COVID in our county, but it has calmed down some in February. We continue under our current response model with the COVID-19 station shifts for volunteers. All things going forward, full steam. So I wanted to just talk a little bit about some of the projects I'm working on. One is we're working to hire some per diem EMTs. One of the problems our agency has is, you know, there is no established way for our full-time EMTs to take time off. And we need to be, you know, we should not be paying, you know, volunteers to cover those shifts above a certain rate. So we need to hire per diem EMTs, and I'm working on that now. We're likely to hire two or three. It's well within the budget established for EMTs. I can give you the bars code if anyone's interested. So I'm posting that into this week, early next week. That resolves kind of a longstanding problem that we've had. The downside of this, of course, is once someone is a per diem EMT, which makes them a part-time employee, they can no longer fill volunteer shifts. So there is some downside for us on this, but it's where the agency needs to go. Dr. Corsa has been introducing a lot of new toys. He's brought ultrasounds. We bought some ultrasounds, and he's been training people in the use of that, our medics, IV pumps, which we've not used in some time, but he's getting everyone in the county to use them. He's implemented the newest research on BVMs, which is like it's basically a mechanism to aid someone in respiration. And basically, the science shows that the size of bag valve mass, BVM, is like this big kind of plastic thing you kind of squeeze and it pumps air in people's lungs. It's too much air and it's causing damage to people's lungs. And so they're actually, the standard of care is moving to using pediatric BVMs, which is kind of interesting. We're now using pediatric BVMs on all patients and then infant BVMs for infants, but and this protects people's lungs better. So Dr. Corsa has been working on with our staff on that. We've launched a number of initiatives with the fire district, and Norman and I, Chief Collins and I, continue to work together on a number of issues. We've come to an agreement on some mutual training, each agency to do one mutual training. And we've got our crews checking in with each other on a regular basis. And this gives our crews a chance to familiarize themselves with each other's equipment. We've also kind of brushed off and refreshed on some of the policies about when they can operate our vehicles. It does happen. You get a bunch of calls at once. You just don't have enough people. Having them help with our vehicles is helpful. We've also straightened out a number of kind of marine transport issues and things related to that. So we've been awfully busy on the ops front. We've also updated our COVID guidelines. That's been a hard one, figuring out how to handle. Of course, our COVID policy is no COVID, but our COVID precautions, those policies is what I'm referring to. We're working on that. You know, most of our agency is now vaccinated. 90% of people in our agency are vaccinated. It's not quite as high as I like, but it's still quite good. And it's been a challenge trying to figure out how do you handle any adjustments, if any, to how you handle things in the station. So that's some of the operational things we're working on that we're working through. Long-term, I know that I also need to hire more per diem medics. That's something I'm working on and working with the volunteers to kind of increase engagement and find ways to help that program, which I think has struggled some since COVID. I think Commissioner Lindstrom mentioned earlier the kind of sense of disconnect people can sometimes feel. We are allowing people into the station more when they're not on shift now than we were sort of loosening things up some, but we're still imposing quite a few cautions. And as with anything, you know, I find some people think I'm being way, way too cautious, way too conservative. And other people just think I'm being reckless. So, you know, constantly talk to the medical program director, talking to the safety officer, talking to staff, trying to find ways to accommodate people's needs and concerns while being safe. So it's been a busy time. I like where we're going. We're resolving a lot of challenges, working through, you know, tonight we've dealt with a lot of liabilities and challenges and trying to get our finances the way they need to be. We should have a new sprint rig shortly, which the Pam ordered in the fall, and also our new ambulance should come later this year. We're very excited about that and pleased where things are headed. Does anybody have any questions or things they want to talk to me about?
No, as I said, you've done a wonderful job of sharing a ton of information with us over the last month. You both have. So I don't feel like I have a lack of understanding over what's going on. So thank you for that. I only wish we had our new ambulance during that snowstorm. Those automatic chains would have come in handy.
Yeah. We had a full and we did a chains training. Because last time we had a snowstorm, I basically had to call. We had a marine transport that day. And so I had a crew heading out of the boat. Snow was coming down. I walk out into the bay. There's chains laid out. They had started putting them on, hadn't finished. I put on overalls. I called Steve Alois. He came and helped me. We figured out chains on. It was a great day. It was a lot of fun. But I mean that genuinely. It is fun. It's fun dealing
with. Put chains on a boat?
On an ambulance. the boat didn't need them this time. We disabled the landing mechanism to go up on shore. Okay, I'm making that up. No, sorry, I should have been more clear. The chains on the ambulance. So we brought in everyone on training night, socially distanced in groups, gave them training on how to use chains. And so now everyone knows how to do it. And we also came up with like kind of a winter response model. You know, our first out ambulance changes in a storm. Instead of using 831, our kind of DOTY, our first out ambulance, our newest one, it's actually not quite as good in the snow. And so we use 832 or 833 in a snowstorm. So we kind of worked through those sorts of things and felt much more prepared. That storm hit and we got a lot of calls during that storm. We were really busy that first night. A lot of calls and a marine transport from Lopez. So we were very glad we were prepared. And our team handled it very, very well. Very proud of them. Grateful to have a chance to work with them.
A great report. Thank you.
All right.
Are there any further questions from the commissioners this evening? In that case, we can open up for audience participation. So anyone on the line can go ahead and press *6 to unmute themselves. And I'm not hearing much. Are there any commissioner comments before we close? Quiet, okay. Well, in that case, thank you all very much for your time tonight, and thank you everyone for your hard work. I'm going to move to adjourn this meeting.
Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night, all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, all.
Thank you, Nathan. Thank you, all of you. Thank you all who came and listened from the public and our members. Night.
Yep.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Take care.
Can you say the time, Annalisa, just for the...
Oh, yes. It's, it's 7:33. Look at us. 2 hours.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night, Peggy. Thank you. Good night, everyone.